Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings to all of you from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Glad to be with you. The proverbial dark and stormy night here in the desert, winds blowing, rain pounding, thunder and lightning rumbling across the Mojave. The Associated Press, I think, reported last night this same storm system came in over Northern California and Northern Nevada. They clocked 100-mile-per-hour winds in the Sierra. Nothing quite that drastic down here, just a nice storm all day long. And I really love desert storms. It makes for great radio weather, too. A good night to stay inside, curled up in a dimly lit room, and just kind of let your mind wander down dark, spooky paths. We've got a jam-packed, eclectic mix for you this evening. If you were with us last Sunday, you might recall my mention of the FBI making a public spectacle of sorts in connection with the return of the X-Files program to network TV. The FBI sent out a notice on various social media platforms. The place I noticed it was Twitter, and it urged the public to check out the real X-Files. And when I say real, I'm using air quotes around real. I'd say it's real is in the eye of the beholder in this case, because the FBI, like most government agencies, has been, what you'd say, less than forthcoming when it comes to UFOs and UFO files. They denied for years they had any interest whatsoever, and then they were forced to release thousands of pages of documents on UFO cases and investigations once the Freedom of Information Act became the law of the land. Ditto for the CIA. They denied ever having much interest. Nah, we don't care about it. We don't look at the UFOs. We don't care about that subject, which kind of made it harder to explain the thousands of pages of stuff it was forced to release, showing that the CIA collected UFO information for decades. And I should have guessed that if the FBI was going to make a stink about how open and honest it was being with its old UFO files, that its comrade in intelligence, the CIA, might do the same thing. Sure enough, after that thing was posted by the FBI on Twitter, there have been all kinds of news stories over the last week about how the CIA is doing the same thing, being so candid in releasing these new UFO files. And again, I'm using air quotes around the word new, because there was nothing new in what was released. It's all been made public before, and mostly it was made public over the objections of the CIA, which didn't want to reveal any of it. Except maybe the parts that make fun of UFO cases or witnesses or incidents which turn out to be hoaxes. It's not exactly a proud week for my profession, journalism. Across the board, journalists and headline writers at every level seem woefully, ridiculously uninformed about this topic. Their knowledge base is such an infantile level that they took the CIA's word for it that this stuff is new. They marvel at the openness of these secret keepers in sharing this once classified stuff with the hoi polloi. Major newspapers, wire services, TV networks, local TV stations, they all made the same mistake. And it just drives me up the wall. You know, it's not the first time. Certainly won't be the last time. So I thought it might be fun to bring along a guest who knows the ins and outs of UFO documents and FOIA as well as anyone. He's filed more FOIA requests, again, Freedom of Information Act requests, than anyone I know. And as a result, his website, The Black Vault, is perhaps the largest in the world for this sort of thing. Not only UFO files, but documents on JFK, secret technologies, weapons, all kinds of cool stuff that was once classified, but has now been forced out into the open. That's what we'll do in this hour. His name is John Greenwald. He's been a guest on the program in the past, but not with me, so I really look forward to hearing his thoughts on these so-called releases from the FBI and CIA, and find out what else is cooking down there in the Black Vault. That's coming up in just a minute or two. Then in hour two tonight, we'll continue the UFO theme a bit, but with a different slant. You all recall the hit TV series UFO Hunters. It's no longer on the air. It lives on in DVD and on-demand video services. Bill Burns was the guy on the show who wore the shades and the baseball cap. He assumed the lead role as a co-host. I think they had four at one point, then they had three, but he was sort of the lead guy. And he was the one in the program who defended the pro-UFO, pro-conspiracy kind of point of view, the kind of view that maybe listeners of this program might share. It was a really good show. UFO Hunters never failed to amaze, highly entertaining, often went above and beyond in looking for solid evidence in these cases. And it's not only always adopting the pro-UFO point of view, it looked for the evidence wherever it led. Some of the major UFO cases in the world, past and current, they pursued. And Bill Burns has written a second book, a companion piece to this series, which includes behind-the-scenes glimpses of how they dug into each case and topic, the travel adventures they had, the obstacles they ran into. UFO Hunters Book 2 is a very fun read, and we'll jump into some of the highlights in Hour 2. Then in the second half of the program, we take an abrupt turn to talk about Bill's other new book. The guy is prolific, and it's about the amazing and tragic life of one of Hollywood's biggest stars, the biggest stars of all time, actor Mickey Rooney. And while some of our younger listeners might be wondering, you know, who's Mickey Rooney? Why bother? Rooney actually died less than 2 years ago under extreme circumstances that are still reverberating through the movie industry. And if you think of current wild child performers, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll types, all sorts of scandals and bad boy behavior, like Justin Bieber or Miley Cyrus or Lindsay Lohan, put them all together, they've got nothing on Mickey Rooney. How he lasted in showbiz for most of the 20th century and beyond is amazing, given his incredibly bad habits and thirst for debauchery. It is quite a tale. Even if you don't really remember much about who Mickey Rooney was, it's an engrossing story. And it should be gripping stuff with Bill Burns, because the book certainly is. Our webmaster Lex and I have put together our usual assortment of news, oddities, and items. We posted on the Coast to Coast website under the title Naps News. Take a look when you get a moment. Included this week, an interesting theory about why we haven't found confirmed intelligent life out there in space. Maybe blame it on climate change on other planets. Hey, if there's anything that can get us interested in climate change and its consequences, maybe it's this, the death of aliens. With that, let's take care of business. Put out a blanket or a pillow for the dog and the cat over there by the fire. Toss on a log or two. Pour a strong cup of Joe. Slip into those jammies and robes. And plop yourself down, because we're about ready to rumble. Back in a moment with John Greenwald and the Black Vault. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. My guest, John Greenwald, started researching the inner workings of the U.S. government at the ripe old age of 15 years old. That was back in 1996. He targeted the CIA, FBI, various Pentagon entities, NSA, DIA, and other government bodies. And he's used the Freedom of Information Act as sort of as a stiletto to carve documents out of the government that they probably didn't want to release. Thousands and thousands of pages. Excuse me, make that a million pages. 1.5 million altogether. It might be even higher than that now. The largest private collection of government documents anywhere in the world. And I can't wait to talk to him about the topic we just mentioned in the introduction. John, welcome back to the program.
I appreciate that. It's good to be here.
We'll get into talking about the Black Vault in a moment. I knew I could count on you to comment on it. I saw that you had posted some stuff along after the CIA's release. Like me, were you sort of both amazed and disgusted when the CIA comes out and says, looky here, the real X-Files?
You know, yes and no. It's silly to me and very humorous, like you said, because it's not new. These documents have been around for quite a few years and have been out there. And I had posted them online years before the CIA decided to. And even on their own site, though, they've been around for many years. So it didn't surprise me, I guess, that they tried to latch on to the popularity of the X-Files to kind of do this PR campaign, because essentially that's what it is, to kind of highlight their show of transparency. But again, when you get down to the brass tacks here, they're not new. The documents have been declassified before, and it's something that is not really fresh. Now, I'm going to defend the CIA. It's very rare for me to do this. But I think at this point, it's not really the CIA or the FBI's fault that these documents are being misrepresented. I was happy to hear you say it. I think it's the journalists. I mean, almost a year ago to the day, I found myself entwined in kind of a very misrepresented document release out there when it came to the Project Blue Book material. And that turned into some huge debacle of essentially the media misrepresenting what the government has come out with. So I defend them in the sense that I think the media itself wanted to play off of the popularity of the X-Files and start getting those website hits, start getting those stories viral, and essentially just get traffic based on that popularity when the bottom line, you look at the documents, there's really nothing fresh or new.
I thought it was amazing, sort of about face for both CIA and FBI, as you know better than almost anyone. I mean, they're not exactly forthcoming about this stuff. They lied about it for so long. They only released stuff reluctantly, and even then, you never know. A lot of the stuff I think was blacked out, and who knows what has never been released or was stashed somewhere else or shredded before it was ever made public. But for them to draw attention to it at all just seems kind of out of character. I know they posted this stuff a long time ago, but for them to put up a big flashing neon sign and say, come look at our stuff, just seems weird.
It does, and this is where I back away from defending them, because I think there's a lot to be said about the old adage, hide it in plain sight. And I think that essentially what they're looking for is that PR, hey, we're being transparent. And I think public perception might see that as, oh, well, if they're giving it away, then there's probably nothing there. And I think that we have to really kind of sit down and take a moment and look at that, because I think that's very true with today's day and age, where if the government tells you something, then essentially I think the general public will essentially think there's nothing interesting about it and move on. And so I think that that was part of this PR campaign. When you start looking at how these documents were released, regardless of them being around for a couple of years now, you have to look at how they were released. And it took court cases, it took Freedom of Information Act requests. A lot of the documents had been out before, and when I was 15, the CIA, now 20 years ago, when I was 15 and I started hitting these government agencies with FOIA requests, the CIA essentially just kind of put a price tag on the documents that they had released because they did not have these on the internet. I essentially paid for this big stack of material, but what I found interesting was the CIA lacked discussing anything after about 2005, I think is roughly the date, when I started really pushing for getting new material out, because the CIA had only released the material up until the late 90s. And my question was, well, what about the stuff after that? And it really did take years for me to fight. And to kind of summarize the story, when it came down to it, I had to fight for quite a few years. The CIA then all of a sudden released over 1,000 new pages on UFO material and released that to me as well. And so when you start looking at these releases, it's not about them kind of putting the highlight on a few pages here and there as they are right now. You really got to dig into it and realize there's much more to this story than they do highlight. And even though they put that spotlight on a few pages here and there, and yes, it is fascinating, there's so much more documentation from the CIA that we should all look at, because I think it's a much bigger picture than they're leading us to believe.
We'll get into some specifics about what is available on the Black Vault in a minute. But I want to, while we're here, talking about the kind of obstacles that you've run into. I mean, they haven't made it easy. The CIA, FBI, none of them have, I don't think. But
no, not at all.
What would you, we'll talk about that. I mean, have you had to hire lawyers? Have you got to that point? I know some UFO researchers along the way have had to go to court to force this, as you mentioned. But have you had to go that far?
It comes down to funds at that point of hiring a lawyer. And no, it's a very expensive thing to do. I have yet to take them to court. Hopefully, you know, that's something I don't have to do, in the sense that it just becomes very tedious, very laborious and time consuming and also expensive. But what I have done is push it all the way up until that point, and have had quite a few successes with FOIA appeals, which is the process that you undergo right before you do take them to court. and also, you know, just essentially filing the original FOIA request in the beginning. A lot of times documents aren't just freely given away, but if you ask in a certain way and ask the right way, then you can have quite a few successes. And that is one thing that I'm a big advocate for, is kind of getting the message out there that the Freedom of Information Act does work. A lot of kind of naysayers will say, well, they black out everything or they'll just lie to you. You know, I try not to be a complete pessimist about it, and I try to be a little bit optimistic. I don't want to think that they just lie and destroy everything, you know, under the sun. I think that there are good people on the other side that, you know, do have that kind of thirst for transparency, that when a FOIA comes in, they in good faith will respond accordingly. But it does take a lot of patience, and that's the biggest challenge for me, because I'm an impatient kind of guy when it comes to researching this stuff. And it's not that you wait weeks or months. You literally wait sometimes years for a document to come. And I literally have waited over 13, I believe my record is 13 and a half years for a document to come. And that's a long time. And we really think about it. Think about what you were doing about 13 and a half years ago. And think that's when you ask the CIA for a record, and 13 and a half years later, they give it to you.
Yeah, my longest.
You know, that's a long time.
My record is 7 years. That was not for a UFO document. That was for the criminal case file of a gangster from Las Vegas. But 13 years, I don't know that I could last that long. Tell me this. Do you suppose that the CIA, Pentagon, FBI, whatever, NSA, stash this stuff somewhere else where you can find it, that they eliminate the paper trail, or they give it to somebody else and where stash it in a place where maybe you wouldn't think to look with FOIA?
Well, it's possible. I've filed FOIAs to pretty much every corner of the government, so I think that they would have to really hide it in a place that essentially is just not, you know, not even touchable by the FOIA, and there's not many places that aren't, meaning it does apply to any federal agency and military installation out there. It is interesting to note that I did find a manual from the United States Air Force many years ago, the same agency that claims that they investigated UFOs and Project Blue Book, and after 22 years, kind of concluded that there was nothing to the topic. And yet I found a United States Air Force manual that specifically had mentioned unidentified flying objects in black and white to be reported by military pilots and so on. And so I kind of tracked down and did the paper trail thing of where do these documents go? And I tracked it down that it went to the NORAD installation, which essentially makes sense. That's one of the very few installations that I found out the hard way does not comply with the Freedom of Information Act. And it's the reason is because they are under not only United States control, but also Canadian control. And so Canada owns a chunk of this, and so U.S. law doesn't apply. So how convenient, you know, on your question, how convenient that this black and white, you know, irrefutable proof that they were collecting UFO records, they get sent to the one agency that essentially is not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. So I had actually gone through the Canadian government after NORAD had told me, well, we don't comply with the FOIA, but in good faith, we're going to go ahead and search for responsive documents. Oh, by the way, John, we found none. And so, you know, they said, and I love that term, by the way, in good faith. I mean, what did they do? You know, how extensive of a search did they really kind of undertake? Well, I went through the Canadian government under the Access to Information Act, which is actually open to U.S. citizens as far as I could tell anyway. And so I had called the Department of National Defense and asked about these specific records. And the guy that answered the phone, and this is no exaggeration, I was in mid-sentence asking specifically about what these reports were. Their nickname were service reports. CIRVIS was the acronym. And I never mentioned UFOs. I never mentioned John Greenwald, the Black Vault, or what I was doing. I just essentially mentioned these service reports. And he interrupts me in mid-sentence, and he literally had these documents within arm's reach. And he had a little over 100 pages within arm's reach. And he interrupted me and said, oh, I have them right here. And it just boggles my mind that the guy that answers the phone for the Department of National Defense had documents that NORAD claims didn't exist. And I eventually got them. I have them online at theblackvault.com. And you can go and download them and you can see these things. And it's just adding to the pile of literally thousands of UFO pages that shouldn't exist. If you listen to the company line or you kind of fall for their standard responses, thousands of these documents that I had to wait sometimes years to get, that I had to go through other governments to get, none of them should exist. And yet there they are. And one of the biggest kind of notes that I get after doing shows like this, and I'll just kind of clear this up right now, these are not leaked documents. These are not, you know, coming from a Edward Snowden type where somebody gave these to me.
We're going
to
get into that because I'm sure you get hit with that a lot. Why are you going after secrets? If the government wants to keep it secret, who are you to delve into areas where you don't belong? We're going to get into that in a moment, and then you can tell us about what the CIA posted here over the last week or so. Some of it, including the tips that it gave out of how to investigate a flying saucer, are pretty interesting. Jefferson Airplane volunteers, another week, another rock icon gone, this time Paul Kantner, who was 74. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Good song, Let Love Be Your Energy, by international star Robbie Williams, a guy who, by the way, knows plenty about UFOs and UFO cases, more than most, in fact. We're talking with John Greenwald about UFO documents. One of the key ones that I want to get into in a moment is what's known as the Bolander Memo. And in 1969, when the Air Force canceled Project Blue Book, which for all its faults was at least something that it was doing in the public on the UFO topic, there was a document that surfaced by this general named Bolander who said, even though Blue Book is being canceled, all those UFO cases that affect national security, they'll continue to be handled in the same old way, which suggests that somewhere information continued to be collected. But where that is, we don't know. Maybe John knows. We'll ask him about it. And if you just heard the announcement there, I will try to take a couple of calls, save some time for a couple of your questions or comments. But folks, our guest here is an expert on the Freedom of Information Act and how to request documents and secret stuff like that. So let's keep our eye on the ball here. If you're going to call in with a question or comment, keep it in that realm so it's relevant to the guest on hand. So we'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. So, John Greenwald, during the break, I mentioned the Bolander memo, the infamous Bolander memo that suggests that someone else was collecting UFO information after Blue Book ended. Is that NORAD? Is that maybe, you think, the organization that this was referring to?
Well, I think it makes sense. And then the Air Force Instruction 10-206 that I had found, you know, quite a few years ago now, definitely said NORAD. Now, one interesting note on this, and I'll make the story quick, is the Huffington Post and Lee Spiegel was doing a story on me and some of my findings, and I brought this up in the course of their story because I feel it was, you know, of great importance to the field, and it was black and white proof that they were still interested in UFOs. And Mr. Spiegel did quite a great approach, I should say, a journalistic way of trying to figure out, you know, well, what would they say if they were asked about this? And he left quite a few messages for the Air Force and trying to get a response on what exactly did this mean. And this instruction, I should point out, was edited quite a few times throughout the last 10-15 years when it was created. And so they had a lot of opportunity, essentially, to take UFOs out if it was not an interest to them. And after he had left a couple messages, he had a deadline, he was starting to write his article, he went back on to download again this Air Force instruction, because I taught him how to do it directly from the Air Force. So he didn't have to take my word for it. He can get it directly from the Air Force. And he was pretty amazed that they had released this, but nobody was really looking at it. Well, lo and behold, about 48 hours after he had started leaving messages saying, hey, I'm spotlighting this on a news article that I'm writing, Chapter 5, which is what outlined the unidentified flying objects and how and where to report them, was completely gone and rewritten. And it was a brand new chapter. UFOs was completely omitted. And his story changed quite a bit after that, meaning the angle of his story, because that was pretty unexpected. Essentially, what happened is they rewrote Air Force Instruction 10-206 within 48 hours of the Huffington Post asking the question, hey, what does this mean?
Now, that's pretty amazing.
Interesting.
That's amazing.
That's a pretty amazing chain of events that kind of leads us to believe there's something being covered up here. You can't hide from that fact. The question mark is, well, what exactly is it?
You know, Lee is an exception, and he writes for a national publication. He has an incredible knowledge base about UFOs. You can't pull anything over on him. He wouldn't be fooled enough to say that this is new stuff. But unfortunately, he is an exception, and it's amazing. We touched on it briefly before. I can't understand it, and maybe you get contacted by journalists all the time, I would imagine, and want to ask you about documents on the website, especially at a time now when there's a heightened interest with the return of the X-Files. You know, they like to exploit the woo-woo factor when sweeps comes rolling around a couple times a year. And yet, you know, they know it's a ratings grabber. They know the public is interested, and yet they don't go anything beyond the surface level of reporting on it.
Yeah, and I kind of scratch my head. I'm not really sure. I've worked in television now for about 10 years, and I've worked on some amazing projects that I'm very proud of. One of which was I produced and wrote for Bill Burns and UFO Hunters on season 3 of his History Channel show. So I've done a lot of these types of programs, and the journalistic approach is very important to me and kind of part of my passion of doing what I do, because it's important to ask questions and it's important to get it right. And in my book, yes, entertainment is important, but you do have to be factually correct when you're reporting something like this. Obviously, the X-Files had some fun, you know, real facts intertwined in their fiction, but at the end of the day, it's still fiction. When you're doing something that's nonfiction, when you're doing something that's real, that's the approach I take. That's the approach Lee takes. Unfortunately, I think a lot of journalists are forgetting that they're going the entertainment route. They want the viral story. They want the hits. They want that sweep story that's going to get them the ratings instead of actually being journalistic. And I think that that's what's very much lacking. And one quick example, I won't out the network, but it was a very major, big network that had a major national morning show. And they had asked me about a year ago to talk about the Project Blue Book material that I had put online at the time. And they were kind of approaching it as brand new. The government just released all this. And I had never said that. I just gave a different way to be able to access the documents. And it got so blown out of proportion by the media that it was actually a full-time job just to try and, you know, get the story straight for a lot of these guys. So I did this morning show. They're in my ear in New York. It was right before taping. And for 10 minutes, I literally had to tell them, this is not real. This is not real. I'm sorry. No, you can't do that angle. I don't want to do this live to you, but, you know, I'm sorry, but that's just wrong. So for about 10 minutes, I'm explaining this. And I thought it was clear, right? And then so the cameras turn on, everything's going. So in my ear, the very first question, John, what do you think of this newly released government material? What are they doing? And it's like, really, like for the last 10 minutes, we just were talking about this. And so the point of that is, I think that they just don't care. The majority, not everybody, because I don't want to just trash every journalist out there. But I think the majority of them just don't care about the facts anymore. And it's a shame because, honestly, I mean, you can't get much better of a story than the truth. And I think that they just want to twist and contort and, you know, just report on what they want to report on. Unfortunately, they're missing some amazing real facts in the process.
Yeah, I mean, the Black Vault is loaded with stories, factual stories you could do. It's laid out in black and white, and you don't have to take some wild-eyed witness's word for it. These are government documents. This is stuff investigated by the Air Force and FBI in some cases. Tell me a little bit, capsulize what the CIA put out, what you found most interesting in the stuff that they posted, even though it's not new. Some of it is pretty interesting.
Well, what I find interesting is that, you know, again, taking the company line that UFOs are kind of nothing more than swamp gas and the planet Venus and they can easily explain everything. Why is it that years after the CIA was still collecting these UFO reports? And it was well known that the United States military and the Air Force in particular had already investigated these things. So what was it about the UFO phenomena that still was of great interest to the CIA? And it didn't just stop at the CIA. I mean, I've attacked every, you know, government agency out there with FOIA requests. The CIA is not alone. The FBI had a big pile of pages like you had referenced earlier, Defense Intelligence Agency, National Security Agency. And you look at the documents, and I'm kind of blanket answering your question, that you look at all these documents, thousands of them that come after the Project Blue Book era, it really kind of shows you that Blue Book did not solve this. This was not something that was case closed. This was something that was a threat to our national security. It was of concern and is still a concern to our United States government, as it should be. And I think that when you look at that, I know I keep calling it the company line, but when you look at what they want you to believe, but then you look at the actual real story and you look at the black and white proof, they're two wildly different angles. And so when you look at those documents and you see what's actually real about the UFO phenomena, then you think, okay, this is not a top secret aircraft. Because I'm sorry, if the United States military can't identify something in the sky, the skeptics can't say it's a, you know, unidentified military top secret aircraft. It just doesn't work that way. It wouldn't come up under my FOIA request looking for UFO material. Whatever this phenomena is, it is definitely unidentified to the military. But what strikes me strange is that they're so adamant about this particular topic not being an interest to them. If they were just kind of, again, maybe it's the hiding in plain sight thing, but if they just came out and said, hey, look, these things are appearing over nuclear installations, over the nation's capital, still to this day, we want to take it seriously because it's a threat, but we just don't think it's alien-related. I think that would really kind of soften everything, and they'd be in a lot better shape. But instead, they're so adamant about saying, well, we don't really collect these things anymore. No, we don't. We're not interested. We did this through the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and Project Blue Book said there's nothing there. And that's their company line, and they're so adamant about that, and yet they keep getting tripped up in their own lies. Yeah. That, to me, is some of the tip of the iceberg of the most interesting. Then you drill down into the documents. And then you see that there are UFO cases that cannot be solved. What was interesting about the CIA quote-unquote release this week was something actually new, and it was a guide on how to investigate a flying saucer. Now, in my opinion, when you read through it, it does belittle the topic, but in the process, they come up with one of the more fascinating cases when it comes to the Project Blue Book material and the Lonnie Zamora case in Socorro, right, New Mexico. And here you have a, you know, police officer who saw a UFO, he saw bodies come out of it. And you look at the details of this and you realize, wait, this there's a lot more to this. So I did find that interesting because that's the case that the CIA kind of highlighted in this How to Investigate a Flying Saucer guide. Of course, in the same breath, they pretty much belittle everything and say, well, we essentially think we've solved everything, and the CIA wants to take credit with their U-2 flights and so on and so forth, which I think is really silly. But be that as it may, it's interesting that at least it's getting attention. And I do want to at least be an optimist about that the public is looking at this material thinking there is more to it. Maybe I can take a few more minutes and drill down even deeper.
Before I go to the phone lines, what would you say to folks out there who might want to file their own FOIAs? You know, they've never done it before. I mean, you know, they could file a FOIA on themselves, ask the FBI if they've got a file on them, you know, if they've had any circumstances that might have led to it. It's a fun thing to do. I do it once every 10 years or so to see what might be lurking in there. So if you wanted to give them some advice, can they go to the Black Vault and get a sort of a step-by-step?
Yeah, if you go to theblackvault.com, I've got a message for them. You can even ask me if you have any questions. But if you go to the FBI file section, I think anybody would be amazed on how many people do have files in the past. Of course, some of the big names and celebrities, some are not too shocking. Others make you scratch your head and go, wow, well, what's going on with this? You know, and you start looking into Lucille Ball's FBI file, Frank Sinatra, and
John Lennon,
all these people that are, you know, names that you would definitely recognize. But my advice to the public is don't give up. That's it. That would be my biggest thing, because I think part of it, it's a game when you use the Freedom of Information Act. And one of the biggest things here when you play this game is that they will make you essentially wait, and you'll have to maybe kind of wait a couple months, a couple years, depending upon what you're asking for, but keep at it. And if you keep on them and you ask a question, there are human beings on the other side, and they are genuinely interested in helping, some of them. And so by asking, you know, questions and status requests and so on, you do get results. It just takes a little bit of patience, and that's what I would recommend to anybody who wants to do it. But the blackvault.com is a prime example of the process working. And like you mentioned at the top of the show, 1.5 million pages I've received directly from the government. And again, these aren't leaked. So I've been able to amass 1.5 million pages over the last 20 years. And so hopefully that shows some kind of testament that this is a working process. It just takes a little bit of patience while you're doing it.
Yeah, people should know they can go there and look at this stuff for free too. You're not charging for it. They can click on what interests them.
Yep, been free since day one.
Let's take a call or two. On a first-time caller, Larry in Montgomery, Alabama, has a question. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the program. We're on with John Greenwald.
Hello, Mr. Greenwald. My name is. I live in Montgomery, Alabama, and growing up during the 70s, we would go to Maxwell Air Force Base to take swimming lessons, and we had to go to my father's office to wait for the, and they would take us home during lunch. So it would be about a 2 or 3 hour wait in his office. But along one side of his wall of his office, which is probably about 40 feet, they had a bank of filing cabinets, and we were always told that's where they would keep, they kept the Blue Book files, and they were always locked. We weren't allowed anywhere near them, and they were basically ignored. He ran a printing plant, and the printing plant was, functioning. It was always ongoing. They were always busy, but this whole group of filing cabinets were basically ignored and off limits, and that's what we were told. We were told that that's where they kept the Blue Book files and the UFO informations and the documents and things. And the thing that always struck me was that for the government, especially during the 70s, to be in denial about UFO sightings and things like that, they had a hell of a lot of files that they kept.
But so, John, does this ring a bell with you? Have you heard about the Blue Book having any stash or archive in Alabama?
Not in Alabama, but it kind of doesn't surprise me. According to the government, everything was transferred years ago to the National Archives in Washington, D.C. I found out that the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where Blue Book was headquartered, actually had over 1,000 pages of Project Blue Book, Project Sign, Project Grudge material, which were the names of kind of the precursor investigations. And so essentially, bottom line was, it showed me that even though they think they transferred 100% over, I do have it documented that the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base told me, hey, we have nothing, it's been transferred over. 6 months later, they actually stumbled on over 1,000 pages. So, it doesn't surprise me at all that documents would still kind of be, you know, hidden throughout different areas. Alabama, I'd be curious to know a little bit more about exactly where, but, you know, not too surprising, because I just don't think the government knows quite where 100% of everything is located. I don't think they're the greatest at keeping track of things.
Larry, if you're still around, send me an email. I'll forward it to John. Maybe you guys can continue the conversation. We have a link to John's stuff on the Coast to Coast website, too. I'd be interested in the time frame, the year that you say that stuff was there. We'll try to get one more call in. East of the Rockies, James in San Antonio. Hi, James. You're on with John.
Yes, sir. John, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I visited the Black Vault many times, and I'm a fan of your work.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
My question is, I'm sure there's documents of possibly maybe the government being involved in maybe alien technology, and I'm curious if maybe any of the alien technology has reach maybe the public or the commercial sector.
James, let me interrupt to just say we got about a minute, John. So have you seen any paper trail that suggests it's gone to the commercial sector?
No, just other than, you know, and in fact, your next guest can talk about this more than I can, but obviously wrote the book The Day After Roswell and stories like that. Nothing when it comes to official files coming out connecting extraterrestrial technology to, you know, top secret or private sector technology or anything like that, unfortunately.
If we got 30 seconds left, can you tell us anything that you're waiting on, something good and juicy that you're waiting to see?
There's always, I've filed over 5,000 requests in the last 20 years, and I would probably say I've got about 400 open right now. Nothing off the top of my head, but I will say this. I am going after the internal communications and documents on the creation of the CIA's How to Investigate a Flying Saucer manual. So essentially what you see is the final product. I'm going after all the documents that were generated while they were creating that, including emails and so on and so forth, because I think it'll offer an interesting look on how they created this and essentially what was their mindset. And then once I get them, I just put them all on the blackvault.com and, you know, send out notices and see what the public thinks.
Hey, when that comes in, give me a call. We'll have you back on and talk about it. Thanks, John.
I would love to. Thank you, George. I appreciate it.
All right, folks, check out the Black Vault. That's John Greenwald. Always interesting to have him on, interesting perspective, and he's got a lot of former secrets on that website, so check it out. Johnny Nash, I Can See Clearly Now, take us into the break. Back in a moment with Mr. UFO Hunter Bill Burns.